Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's time to talk state politics, and there's plenty to discuss today. So let's get right to it by welcoming Dakota political junkie Denise Ross. Hey, Denise.
Hey, great to be with you.
Also with us today, Roger Whittle, managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Thanks for being here, Roger.
My pleasure.
Let's start with you, Roger, and let's start with the budget surplus. $8 million left over. 2017 fiscal year ended June 30th, and there's some six straight years of surplus, but there's more to it than that. Right, Roger?
well, maybe a little bit. There's some grumbling out there from people who are saying that our governor, who has really taken pride in the fact that we've had budget surplus of 6 years in a row, is actually over or underestimating the amount of tax money coming in and then cutting the budget more than is necessary. People are saying that, sure, we have $7 million budget surplus this year, but that's $7 million that could have been going, that were cut from social programs that are helping poor people. So on the surface, it seems like a good idea, a good thing, and it really is. I mean, it's certainly better than running deficits, which we're not allowed to do. But there is some concern out there that the cuts are being made too deeply.
So give me the timeline. And the budget gets approved. And explain that logic, that there's some sort of intentionality here with sort of over or under projecting
things. The budget is approved on what the tax estimates are going to be for the next year.
Okay.
And then as the actual numbers come in, then adjustments have to be made. So at some point during the course of the year, our tax receipts are well below what the estimates were, which is what they based the budget on. Then we have to make cuts to bring down to what the actual tax receipts are going to be. I hope that explains it okay.
Denise, the state spent more than $15 million less than it originally budgeted. Where did that money get saved from?
Well, I'm not sure exactly where it all came from, but I'll note this, that whether it's 15 or 7 or 8 million in a general fund budget of over $1 billion, it hit $1 billion back in the 90s at some point or the early 2000s, and it just grows every year. That's basically a rounding error at this point. And so I don't think when the Republican administrations and legislators come out and trumpet the fact that they were they saved $7 or $8 million and were able to put that away, which is, you know, good to have that money in the bank, that's as big of a deal as they make it out to be. And I also don't think with the critics saying, well, we could have spent that money on something else, that's pretty hard to argue when you're looking at a budget of over $1 billion and you're off by, I don't know what the percentage would be, but I'm guessing it's less than 1%. When you get down to that level, you're basically getting pretty close to where you projected you're going to be. And so I don't think you can argue that you could create whole programs or increase the budget of other programs. Now, what Roger was saying, when the real numbers come in and you can start to make adjustments, that's where maybe you could tweak a little here and a little there, and maybe the Republicans make a policy choice in the governor's office to let's do this, let's not do that, and let's have this much money left over to put in the savings account, which is what households do on an everyday basis. And I've heard the governor compare how he looks at the state budget with how he's ran his household over the years. And so, you know, that's what it is. It would be worse, obviously, if we were in a deficit or had to dip into reserves by $7 or $8 million or $15 million. But it's not that far off from what they were aiming for.
All right, I have $7.6 million collected revenue, which was down 0.5%. I'm quoting the Argus Leader there, so I'm not sure. I can't follow that trail all the way for you now, but that's probably pretty close.
Right.
So 0.5%, not too bad, huh? Roger, what do you think? 7.6 million?
Yeah, I was not. I agree that it's a good thing that we come in with this surplus every year, but I was pointing out that there are those who are saying, you know, that's money that could have been spent. But, you know, Denise is right that you can't get it right on the nose every time, and I think the governor has been consistently in that $5 to $7 million surplus every year. So, yeah, it's compared to the whole budget, it's not very much. But I guess some people feel that if you're you know, a poor family that needs some kind of specific help, $7 million would probably sure. be a big chunk of money to them.
Right. Or if, you know, human services or social services was cut, you might have actually seen that budget cut in your personal life. That's the argument, right, Roger?
Right, exactly.
All right, any amount of money is a huge amount when it's embezzled and it's taxpayer dollars. So let's talk about the ongoing investigation into MidCentral and the GOAC Committee, Government Operations and Audit Committee, talking about sort of how far they can go in investigations and getting answers to what happened. Denise, let's start with you there. What do you make of that first GOAC or the recent GOAC Committee and some of the testimony and questions that were coming up?
Right. Well, you know, Gear Up is a scandal and a tragedy that hit the state, in particular the small town of Platt, a couple of years ago. And I think it still resonates with everybody because, and I get choked up when I even think about this, you had four children who were killed. And the conclusion by Attorney General Marty Jackley has been that they were killed by their father, who also killed their mother and himself. But even there's been, and I don't know how widespread this is, but I've heard different skepticism expressed with people I know personally. And even in the reporting, one of the reports I read, it still used the word allegedly, even though that was a conclusion of a state investigation, that this is what happened. Still, a news reporter chose to use the word allegedly that this man shot his family and himself. So I think you start with that, which obviously holds a lot of intrigue and interest, and then you move on to the money. Who took the money? Where did it go? I haven't been able to follow this to the very fine detail, but the news reporting that has been going on with this says there's $1.4 million that's unaccounted for, which to me tells me that they still don't know where that money is. Like, did they track it through individual bank accounts? Did it just disappear into thin air? And I think that's why you're seeing this legislative committee come in and say, we still have a lot more questions that need to be answered. And so you're seeing them call people up to testify. And what's so interesting to me when you compare what's going on at the national level with these intelligence committees and judiciary committees looking into the whole Russian question with the Trump campaign, they're moving full steam ahead to, you know, to under great protest from the White House. And here we had the committee and peer asking, you know, exactly what are the rules that we have to, what rules of the road as we go down this path that we need to follow. And they were cautioned greatly by members of the executive branch, including Attorney General Marty Jackley, about calling witnesses saying, well, they could bring in a lawyer. They might go to court and get a subpoena quashed, and then you wouldn't be able to question them at all, which to me is a pretty flimsy argument for why you should or should not call a witness before your committee, because maybe they might go to court and try and fight the subpoena that you put on them. That never stopped Marty Jackley from subpoenaing anybody in court, and they have the same rights there. So you're seeing some resistance, but it might be strong resistance, but the arguments are not strong as to why they shouldn't call people up and try and get more detail for the public and for themselves about what exactly happened to the money that went missing, and how did that go on? How was it allowed? How come nobody caught it, et cetera, et cetera? So I think there's a state that's still very interested in answering more questions about this issue.
Roger, let's talk about legislative authority or power. How much of that does the GOAC committee actually have? When I talked to Deb Peters, maybe last week, I think it was, she said, we're not going to be the committee that breaks the law. So where is that line? What did we find out?
Well, from what I've understood and read, that they can subpoena state employees to come and testify, but if it's not a state employee, they can only invite them to come and testify. They can't really force them to do that. And I think that's the path they decided to take. They've sure. invited in, or they've they're going to interview four people, from what I understand, which is the state education secretary, her financial officer, the original grant writer for the Gear Up program, and Representative Schoenfisch, whose father heads the firm that audited the Mid-Central Co-op originally.
So we've got a criminal investigation, a possible civil investigation, then we have this committee and folks really call, and it all boils down to people still want answers. They want to know everything. Denise, do you think we'll really ever know everything, Or is the most important thing now to sort of go forward, shore up, so things like this don't happen again with taxpayer dollars?
I feel like accountability is important, and then part of that is finding out exactly what happened. And maybe it's nobody's fault, but maybe there was somebody who didn't do what they were supposed to do, or some agency that decided not to, you know, follow all the rules that they were supposed to follow. We just don't know, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I think State Education Secretary Melody Schaap, as far as I can tell, she's been pretty forthcoming, has appeared a lot of times and answered a lot of questions. I've seen her on the TV news. She's going to these legislative committees. But I do think, as Ryder said, there's people just want more detail about all of this. And I think it's going to be up to this committee to get it. I don't see another way where this comes out. And I'll just point out that this legislative committee said they're going to follow the law. Well, it's the legislature that makes the laws. And so they can change the law if there's something that they want that they're not getting. And they do have the ability to even override the governor if they have a high enough majority vote to get this done. So it's going to be up to the legislature, in particular the members of this committee, to get as much information as they deem is necessary.
Roger, what are your thoughts on going forward to sort of prevent this kind of crime happening in the future? Is that ever possible? Or how tightly can you shore things up to prevent it or to make it so that if someone does sort of engage in criminal activity, it's caught sooner?
Well, I think that in order to stop this from happening again, we have to know exactly what happened this time. So we know what we're trying to stop. And that's why I agree with Denise. I think that we are going to find answers to this, and I don't think the legislature is going to stop until they have all those answers. I don't think the people of South Dakota are going to just say, oh, well, you know, let's let it pass and watch out for the next time. I think people are demanding answers, and I think that they're eventually all going to come out.
Denise, do you think there are more answers out there that people can, again, I'm thinking back to my conversation with Deb Peters, and she said, give us a call. Come forward. Do you think there's still people who can come forward and provide details that we don't know and that would be pertinent to know?
Well, I think it's certainly possible that there are people who know more about that the tragedy piece of this where that family all died. And I remember waking up to the news, and that day it was just a structure fire, and this entire family had died. And then as the day went on and the week went on, you heard more, and it was just a shock, I think, to everybody. And then as far as the scandal piece of this, I think that's where you get the state employees who were managing the money and have the books and have the accounts and what was down at that Mid-Central Cooperative. And if I remember right, and Roger, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they turned over all of their books and information to the state. I'm not sure where that all stands, but anyway, you can certainly go through there more. There's things, you know, they did a state audit to find the money, but there's something called a forensic audit that goes into a lot more detail, and I'm not an accountant, so I can't explain exactly how that all works, but I do know that forensic audits are much, much more detailed, and they basically do track everything and find out everything that you want to know about the money and where it went and who got it and as far as they can track it down, what happened to it.
Roger, I'm going to ask one more question about just sort of how this conversation is handled in the media, different journalists across the state following it up. How important is it, and how do you think it's been handled so far with respect to the community of Platte, to the people who lost loved ones, to the death of children, and then to the current Gear Up program, which is, you know, still functioning and sending Native American kids to college? How important is it to sort of distinguish between this is what happened in the past and yet this is what's happening now with a program that many people see as positive and are proud of, and plus the sort of deeply sensitive and painful issue for people who were touched by the tragedy in a personal way?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I think the fact that there was such a huge tragedy in all this that, you know, went stabbed that town right in the heart, I think because that was so bad, that in itself is a reason to keep digging and find answers, to just give some closure to everybody. And just saying, you know, it's in the past and moving on and trying to prevent something like that from happening in the future, I think, is the wrong move to make. We need to have some closure on this and know exactly what happened and why. And that is really the only way you can make sure that it's never going to happen again.
I'm sure we'll be talking about that more in the future. Let's go ahead and segue to national politics a little bit, Denise, and this presidential Trump approval rating, 57% approval in South Dakota. The only people who love the president more are North Dakotans and West Virginians. So what do you think is driving that in the state, that there are folks that are so positive? I mean, 57% is a strong number nationwide.
First thing I thought of when I saw that number, and again, because so much is coming out at us every day, like a fire hose from the national level, I can't remember the specific details of this, but there was a day when they announced a deal with China, and I don't know if it's specifically a trade deal or some other agreement, but basically agriculture benefited hugely. And I don't know if it was just grain or if it also includes livestock. Again, I apologize, I don't have the details, but it was a big ag agreement with China that is going to let more American products, which will obviously affect South Dakota, where ag is arguably the number one industry, to be imported into China. And I think that is a huge piece of this. And I think if there's any valid complaint that the Trump White House has had over these last 6 months, it's that they didn't get a whole lot of credit for that particular agreement that they struck, because it is a big deal and it does affect a lot of places. And so that could also explain the North Dakota piece of it. But I think that's a factor. I don't think that's everything, but I think that's a big factor in why South Dakotans might like the Trump administration.
Roger, do you have thoughts on that? Same thing as Denise, or you want to expand on that?
A few thoughts. Yeah. My first thought was that 57% is nothing to really brag about. But I think South Dakotans, Midwesterners, if you look at where all of his support is, it's in the South and the Midwest. And I think, you know, we're just nice folks out here, and we don't get that nasty about things. And of course, the West Virginia folks like him because he's trying to breathe new life into the coal industry. So, sure. And coal, of course, is big in that state. But we're heavily Republican state. We voted for him as strong as anybody else in the nation, and I think we're more apt to stick with him through his administration.
All right, and let's just finish off with the current health insurance and health care debate in Washington. Are there political consequences, Denise, do you think, for Senator Thune, Senator Rounds, Congresswoman Kristi Noem in South Dakota as those negotiations go forward, or are we sort of just taking a wait-and-see approach?
Now, I do think there will be political ramifications because health care is such a personal issue for people, particularly those with serious health conditions or family members with serious health conditions. And I dare say that when you expand it out to, you know, anyone who is close friends or family with somebody who has a serious health condition, that's going to encompass a vast majority, if not everybody, in the state. And so I think that the votes so far have been noted, but I think the real issue and question is going to be whether or not something gets passed in the Senate and exactly what is included in that and how people are affected by that. Kristi Noem had a town hall here a couple of weeks ago, and it was dominated by this issue. Hmm. And then I saw a quote from Senator Thune, which I think is a regrettable one, where he said, somebody asked him, you know, what pieces are the priority that you're going to put into this bill as it goes through the Senate, which is happening as we speak. And his answer was, whatever gets us 50 votes. Well, that doesn't assert much of a principle or much of an agenda other than passing something. And I think that's a pretty dangerous place for politicians to be with an issue that is this huge.
Roger, your thoughts?
I totally agree. I mean, they've been talking about replacing it, but you have to replace it with something that's better. And so far, nobody is convinced that what the Senate or the House will come up with is going to be better. And when whatever they pass is implemented and has been around for a couple years, you know, and see what the results are going to be, I think that's when you're going to see the political ramifications of it. I think in the short term, there might be a boost for the Republicans that they finally did it, but
sure.
if it's not a good plan, that boost isn't going to last long.
If they don't do it, if they can't come up with any kind of those 50 votes that John Thune is referring to, never happen. Are there consequences to that too, Roger?
Well, at some point, everyone's going to have to get together and decide to fix what's wrong with the ACA. Which seems to, you know, to most people that that's what should have been done in the first place. But in today's political environment, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So we have to go through this process first. But, you know, eventually, I'm an optimist. Eventually, I think there's going to be some form of health care in the United States that's going to be acceptable to the people. And it might take us 10 years to get there, but eventually it has to happen.
And Denise says, in the meantime, 10 years go by. We'll leave it on the optimistic note, though, and say thank you to our Dakota political junkies today, Roger Whittle, Denise Ross. Roger, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Denise, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.